From time to time, you probably hear those announcements telling the public about a coming tour of gardens. A well-maintained garden is an impressive sight, but it's not like everybody wants to take a tour of a series of gardens. It might be more attractive to more people if food was involved, and it is on a tour coming to the Eureka Arcata area next weekend. Saturday's garden tour is an edible garden tour promoting the idea of growing food instead of lawns. Let's hear more about it. Tamara McFarland is with Cooperation Humboldt, where she's a board member and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Tamara, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
Would you give us a quick overview of Cooperation Humboldt and what it's about?
I'd love to, and I'd also like to just clarify that the tour is Sunday, not Saturday.
Sunday. Oops. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, right in front of me.
Cooperation Humboldt is a nonprofit based in Humboldt County, and we're dedicated to creating a solidarity economy on California's North Coast. And what a solidarity economy means to us is exploring and creating alternative systems that prioritize health and well-being and interdependence, rather than blind growth and corporate greed. So when we were founded a couple of years ago, we organized around what we viewed as the most critical areas of human need. And so we have programs in many different areas, but I coordinate the food program, and that's what the garden tour is under. So our food program is based on our fundamental belief that food, nutritious food, is a fundamental human right and should never be dependent on wealth or income.
And I noticed that there are a couple of different components to the program. One of them is food, not lawns. Is that right?
Yes. The first project we did under the food team was Little Free Pantries. So we purchased about a dozen refurbished newspaper boxes, and we had people and organizations volunteer to host them on their property. So throughout Eureka, there are now about 10 boxes where they're serving as kind of like a neighborhood point where people can do food sharing and put any unused items in there that someone else might be able to use, like personal care items and food, non-perishable food. And those have been really well received. So the next thing we started to work on was we did some free fruit tree planting early this year. We planted 23 fruit trees in publicly accessible spots where the people who own the property committed that when they begin to start to bear fruit, that the fruit will be made available to anybody who passes by. So they're community fruit trees. And then after that, in the spring, we launched into doing lawn conversions. And we've now done 8 lawn conversions where we've taken unused front lawns and turned them into productive gardens with edible plants and pollinator plants and native plants.
So 8 is a good start. Relatively modest sized lawns generally?
Yeah, just typical front yard lawns mostly. A couple have been a little bit larger, but yeah, they've been fairly standard sized yards.
And so how big a process is it to convert a lawn into a vegetable garden or a fruit garden?
Well, it certainly helps if you have a group of 8 or 10 volunteers who can show up and bang it out in one day, and that's what we've been able to provide. We also, we tend to prioritize, eco-friendly principles in doing these projects. And so we generally do sheet mulching, which is basically applying layers of different organic materials to the lawn to smother it out and create rich soil to grow into. So what we usually do is collect a bunch of large cardboard, like from furniture stores, and other local places that are just recycling it anyways. And we bring a bunch of cardboard to the site and lay it all out. And then we layer on different things, but we usually get free horse manure from some local stables, and we get free wood chips from tree companies, and we get some straw, and we just layer that all on. And so over the next couple of years, as that breaks down, it does create a really nice, rich soil for planting into. So that sheet mulching process, it can take a while if there's just one or two people doing it, but if it's a fairly standard front yard and we've got 8 people there, we can get that done in 2 hours, and then we can spend some time planting as well.
And for the people who don't know the process, you're using cardboard because you're avoiding using plastic. Is that the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now we step from lawn to garden. I mean, do many gardens tend to emphasize pretty plants instead of things that can be eaten?
I think a lot of people have and continue to, and, I don't have anything against pretty plants. I certainly have pretty plants integrated in with my food plants. There are a lot of beautiful plants that either bear food or have pollinator benefits or are native plants. So more and more as my consciousness has grown about the importance of these things, you know, I've moved away from purely decorative plants and tried to choose the pretty plants that also have some other benefits to the garden.
We're talking to Tamara McFarland at Cooperation Humboldt. She's the food program coordinator and a board member about the tour, the Edible Garden Tour, coming up on Sunday, September 8th, with six sites in Eureka, Freshwater, and Arcata. It's 11 to 5. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about edible real estate around your house, whether it's a garden, whether it's where your lawn used to be. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Tamara, in order to hold an edible garden tour, did you have to wait for a certain number of gardens to be involved?
We had connections with quite a few already, and actually, since that press release went out saying six gardens, we're actually up to eight, so it's eight total now. It's mostly people that we've already connected with through our work, so it wasn't really that hard to come up with the list. It was actually a little more challenging to narrow it down to the ones that we thought were really the best and most exciting, you know, examples for people. So that wasn't so much a challenge, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so give us a sense of the kinds of things that people see when you talk about looking for exciting examples here. What are some of the things that people will see if they take this tour?
Sure. Well, we tried really hard to represent a variety of different sites. So there are several that are just very standard city-sized lots. So we wanted to make sure that we could show how accessible it could be, even if you don't have a lot of space. And then there are also several that are oversized lots and one that's a little bit more rural, you know, on close to an acre, I think. And also trying to represent a variety of approaches and different stages of maturity. So we have one that's, you know, only a year old to kind of show what it might look like when you first get going. And then we have several that have been in production for, you know, probably over 10 years and then everything in between. So a lot of representation of what kinds of fruit trees grow really well here. We like to try to do a lot with perennials and not just annuals. So berry bushes and fruit trees, and in particular, highlighting gardens that have a lot of them planted. They're the specific varieties that do well here in this climate.
Will the garden tour act sequentially? I mean, you're talking about going from young gardens to old gardens. Will the tour be given in that order?
It's actually not a guided tour. It's self-paced.
Okay.
So people will just, when they buy a ticket, we're emailing out the list of the gardens and directions and a map. And from 11 to 5 that day, they can visit them in any order they like and stay as long as they like or as short as they like in each garden, depending on what's most interesting to them or what might be closer to where they live.
Are there some safeguards in place so that the garden tour doesn't end up like a flock of locusts? I mean, you're not going to be able to pluck things right off all the trees and bushes, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, the people who own the homes or rent the homes will be there, and they'll be interacting with people and kind of guiding them through and answering questions.
And how wide a range of edible items available on this tour?
Well, we're really lucky in our climate, and we actually have, there's a booklet that's in its 16th edition. It's called Fruits of the Humboldt Bay, and it's edited by Sean Armstrong, and it lists all the proven success fruits and berries and nuts here on the North Coast. And it's actually available for free download online. You can find it in the resources area of our website at cooperationhumboldt.com. So if you wanted to get an idea of, you know, something of the variety of what we can grow here, that's a good place to start. And it is pretty impressive. There's a lot of different fruits and nuts and berries that will grow here on the coast.
And it seems, too, that the way the climate changes as you move away from the ocean, you can get different microclimates where different things are able to grow as well.
Yes, even here close to the coast, there's definitely little pockets where it's warmer than others. And there's things that you can do in your own yard to create those microclimates intentionally.
Like what?
Having to do with the way that you maybe site trees or build decks or, you know, there's all kinds of elements that can be put in place on a small homestead, even within a city, you know, things that can direct wind a certain way or reflect the light, you know, reflect sunlight, you know, put a pond in a strategic spot so it's reflecting the light onto a greenhouse, you know, little things like that that you can do to kind of create those spots that you need.
Okay, so places that might be a little shadier rather than sunny, that sort of thing. But give us a sense. I mean, you've already described some complexity in how to design places that grow food, but it sounds like all in all, you're also trying to tell people it's not a hard thing to do if you want to convert a lawn to a food growing space.
Sure, and it does depend a lot on the site. I mean, if you've got a yard that doesn't get a tiny, tiny bit of sun even, you're going to be challenged. But if you've got, you know, at least partial sun, you can grow something.
We're talking to Tamara McFarland at Cooperation Humboldt. She's a board member and coordinator of the food program about the Edible Garden Tour, which is Sunday, September 8th. And instead of 6 sites, it's now up to 8. It's a self-guided tour between 11 to 5. You do have to buy tickets for it. You can join the conversation here on The Exchange now with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Are you right at harvest time for many items in the area gardens, Tamara?
Yes, we are really kind of in the thick of harvest time right now, for sure.
And how big are or small are any of the 8 gardens on the tour?
They're everything from, you know, a city-sized lot where basically every square inch outside is being gardened up to a couple of acres. I think there's only one that's maybe a couple of acres, one that's about an acre, one that's a half an acre, and then the rest are smaller.
So talk about the use of space if you do have a smaller lot. Because I imagine there's a few people thinking, well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to turn this part of my lawn into a food garden, but it's not a very big stretch of land. I mean, you can actually do some pretty intricate things, it seems like, to be able to put out a fair amount of food from a small amount of real estate.
Yeah, and I would recommend for people who are really trying to work on a very small space that they check out Square Foot Gardening. There's a book and accompanying website and everything, and the author there has kind of a proven method that he promotes for growing like the greatest amount of annual veggies in a very small space. I also, you know, besides that approach of Square Foot Gardening for annual veggies, like I mentioned, I also am a big proponent and believer in, you know, incorporating a lot more perennial food producing plants. So that's not as much covered in Square Foot Gardening, but those are a few places to look.
Do you get much frost, if any, on the North Coast?
We do get frost, yeah. We get frost all through the winter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but there are some things anyway that you'll get yields from a couple times a year?
Yeah, potentially. And, you know, perennial doesn't necessarily mean it will yield in the winter. It just means that it won't die back completely. It can survive the winter, so it may still only fruit in the summer, but it's a plant that's going to grow, and its roots and its structure are going to get bigger and more productive over time, and you're not going to have to replant it every year.
For the people who are thinking about converting lawn to food, I mean, and they're afraid, you know, because they've tried to grow plants in the past. I guess I'm talking about myself here, and the plants have died. So what's a good starter set? I mean, what are some good things to start with that you really have difficulty rubbing out?
Well, we can talk about easy plants to start with, but I feel like it would be remiss to not mention the importance of soil. So the most important thing is really to be creating the healthy soil that you need to support your plants. And that, you know, that can be certainly achieved short term with a lot of, you know, chemical additives and fertilizers. I am more of a proponent of building soil over time through applying a lot of organic items. But as far as like fairly foolproof plants, at least in our climate, I'm sure it would be perhaps different if you were in a significantly warmer spot. But here, the, you know, all the leafy greens tend to do really well, and those are ones that you can continue to harvest through the winter here. So the kales and the lettuces and spinach, all that kind of stuff does really well pretty much year-round. And most of the year you can grow like climbing peas, you know, snap peas and that kind of stuff. And they're very easy. They do require, you know, a trellis or something to climb up. But those are a couple of really easy things.
Does it take much space to be able to grow some things that might be able to put up for the winter and keep you going for a while, vegetable-wise?
Not necessarily. I mean, definitely some things take up more space than others. Like I just mentioned, the trellising, mm-hmm. going vertical can also be a really good solution. So there's a lot of things that will climb vertically rather than spread if you give them the opportunity. So a lot of different squashes, like in my garden, I put in a bunch of arches over the walkways and planted squash next to those, and I'm encouraging the squash to go grow up and over the arches rather than spread out all over the ground. The same with, you know, climbing peas. You can do a lot of upward structures that can help those, you know, have space for other things to grow.
So the food is not necessarily all around you. Sometimes it is over you as well.
Right.
All right. How long have you been involved in this yourself? Is it something you've done for a very long time, or did you come to it a little later in life?
You know, I've dabbled in a little bit of gardening, and like you mentioned, not always had the greatest success in the past. And it's only been in the last couple of years since I've started to really discover and explore permaculture principles that I've kind of felt the confidence and had more of an ability to understand what makes it work and what makes it not work. And it's definitely helped me to have a lot more success.
We have about 2 minutes left. I want to squeeze in a phone call here from William in Sutherland, Oregon. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tamara McFarland.
How are you doing today?
Well, yourself?
Hi, William.
Well, my comment is that most of the people around here, they rake their leaves up and burn them. Why do they do that? I actually hauled home 14 trailer loads of leaves last year and mulched all my apple trees, and I have about 150 feet of multiflora rose in front of my property for privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I never water anything.
All right, so let's talk about the use of leaves. Go ahead, Tamara.
That's a great point. There's so many resources that we have available that people don't even understand are resources. I mean, grass trimmings and leaves, all of that stuff makes great mulch. And the more that you mulch those plants, the more moisture is going to stay in the soil, and the more that you're going to create a healthy type of soil where worms are happy and mushrooms, you know, can start to grow and flourish. And that's all what creates that soil health for you.
So before we go, is there one particular spot on the garden tour of 8 gardens now that is the must-see, the you won't believe this, you got to see it kind of thing?
Well, I really think it depends on your interest and what you're hoping to get out of it. But there is one particular site on Lowell in Eureka where I think it's just an incredible example of how much can fit on a city lot. And there's an example on Roberts in Arcata that I think has been referred to as kind of the most mature and impressive example of a permaculture garden, you know, in our region. So those will probably be my top picks. But again, it depends whether you're more interested in seeing a slightly more rural setup or more of an in-town setup. And we've got those. Once you buy tickets at cooperationhumboldt.com, you'll get the list, and it has the description of all the sites so you can choose how to prioritize your time.
Okay, that answers the question about where to get the tickets, cooperationhumboldt.com.
Yes, and you can find us on Facebook as well.
Okay, Cooperation Humboldt, seeking a solidarity economy on the North Coast with alternative systems, not all about growth and corporate ties, hosting the Edible Garden Tour on Sunday, 11 to 5. Again, tickets at cooperationhumboldt.com. Tamara McFarland runs the food system for Cooperation Humboldt and is a board member. Thank you so much for joining us to describe what's going on.
Thanks for having me.